We went into one of the beautiful old Victorian houses. Ribs was having trouble moving his arms, and Joe seemed to be limping from his kidney kicks. I wasn't feeling very well myself. The door was opened by yet another gun carrier. He had a shock of black hair, and on his right cheek was a deep red scar, cut roughly like a Z.
"What kept you so long?" he demanded. "Earl's getting angry."
"Earl didn't say this where Chauncey bitch was a karate expert," Ribs said.
I looked down at my hands modestly.
"Is that Joe and Freddy?"
A nasal tenor squeaked from inside. Its owner appeared in the doorway. Short, pudgy, and bald, he was familiar to me from my early days in Chicago law enforcement. "Earl Smyson," I said. "How absolutely delightful. But you know, if you'd called up and asked to see me, we could have gotten together with a lot less trouble." Earl had carved himself a niche with classy prostitution and extortion, and the rumor was that he would arrange a killing to oblige a friend if the price was right. "Earl, this is quite a place you've got. Inflation can't be hurting business too much." He ignored me.
"Where the hell's your jacket, Joe? You've been walking around Chicago showing your gun to every cop on the beat?"
Joe started to mutter something. I intervened. "I'm afraid that's my fault, Earl. We had a bit of a fracas, and Freddy's ribs got separated, but he knocked me out. When I came to, I was sick on Joe's jacket."
"You let a dame bust your ribs?" Earl yelled. "You can't do a simple little job like fetch a goddamn broad?"
One of the things I hate most about my work is the cheap swearing indulged in by cheap crooks. I also hate the word broad. "Earl, could you reserve your criticisms of your staff until I'm not here? I have an engagement this evening. I'd appreciate it if I can get there on time." Earl gave Freddy a vicious look and sent him off to see a doctor. Then he noticed Joe limping.
"You need a doctor, too? She break your leg?"
he asked sarcastically. "Kidney," I replied modestly. "It all comes from knowing how."
"Yeah, I know about you, Warchowski. If Freddy knocked you out, I'll give him a medal. You can't mess around with me."
I sank down into a wide armchair. "I'm not messing around with you, Earl. I'm not interested in juice loans or..." Before I could finish, he hit me across the mouth. I felt some blood dribbling down my chin. He must have caught me with his ring.
"Don't clown with me, Warchowski. I can call in plenty of people to wipe that smirk off your face."
He signaled to the doorman, who came and held my shoulders against the chair. "Okay, Earl, I'm terrified," I said. He hit me again, then sat down close to my chair.
"Warchowski, I called you down here to tell you to lay off the Thayer case."
"You kill the boy, Earl?" I asked.
"I can mark you so good that no one will ever want to look at your face again. Now just keep your mitts out of that."
"What about the police? Bobby Mallory's hot on the trail, and you can't buy Bobby."
"I'm not worried about Mallory, and I'm not buying you, I'm telling you."
"Who got you involved, Earl? College kids aren't part of your turf." "Unless young Thayer was cutting into your dope territory."
"I just told you not to pry into my affairs."
He came at me, and I kicked him in the crotch. He howled in anguish.
"Get her, Tony! Get her!"
I didn't have a chance against Tony the doorman. When he'd finished, Earl hissed,
"That's just a taste, Warchowski. You lay off the Thayer case. Agreed?"
I shrugged and winced. He seemed to accept that as agreement.
"Get her out of here, Tony," he said.
Tony dumped me unceremoniously outside the front door. I sat for a few minutes on the stairs, trying to pull myself together, then hailed a taxi home. The driver clucked and fussed like a Jewish mother, offering to take me to a hospital. I thanked him, but assured him I was all right.
"Okay, lady," he shrugged. "It's your funeral."
When I got in, I ran a bath and poured myself an inch of scotch. I soaked in water as hot as I could bear it. Gradually, my headache dissipated. Suddenly, I remembered my date with Devereux. I was already late and wondered if he was still there. I looked through my wardrobe for something elegant and found a string-colored Mexican two-piece with a long skirt and a square-neck top that tied at the waist. The sleeves covered my puffy arms, and I didn't have to wear pantyhose or a slip. My lower lip was swollen where Earl's ring had sliced it, and a purple smudge was showing on my left jaw. I tried some makeup. Heavy shadow took the focus from the incipient black eye, and a dark lipstick made the swollen lip look pouty and sexy. Or might, if the lights were dim enough. We'd arranged to meet at the cartwheel. The place was crowded. Ralph sat at the bar with a drink. He looked up as I came in.
"I was about to leave," he said. "You just made it."
In more ways than one, I thought. There weren't any empty stools. "How about letting me have that seat and a scotch?" I said. He grinned and grabbed me, intending to pull me onto his lap, and a spasm of pain shot through my ribs. "Oh, Ralph, don't!" He let go of me at once. "Would you like me to take you home?" I saw I'd have to tell him the truth. "I'd like a chance to explain some things to you," I said. The bar was over-air-conditioned, and I started to shiver.
"Cold?"
Ralph asked. "A little," I admitted.
"I could put my arms around you,"
he offered tentatively. "That would be very nice," I said. "Just do it gently, please." I winced a little, but the warmth and pressure felt good. He looked down at my face and his eyes narrowed.
"Vic, what's wrong with your face?"
"Is it really bad? I thought the makeup covered it pretty well."
"Well, they're not going to put you on the cover of Vogue this week, but it's not too awful. As an old claims man, I've seen lots of accident victims, and you look like one. Have you been to a doctor?"
"You sound just like the cab you took me home this afternoon."
"Was your car badly damaged?"
"My car is not damaged at all. I was beginning to lose my temper, irrationally, but the probing made me feel defensive." At that moment, our table was announced. We sat down, and a waiter materialized. "Were we ready to order?" Ralph told him to go away for 5 minutes. "Ralph," I said, "do you know Earl Smyson?"
"Who?"
"When I got home this afternoon, two hired thugs took me to Earl Smyson's home. If you don't know Earl, don't try to meet him. He is not a nice person. He ordered me off the Thayer case and set one of his tame goons on me to back it up." I stopped. What had happened in Earl's apartment was very raw in my mind. Unconsciously, my left hand had clenched, and I realized I was slicing it against the tabletop. Ralph was watching me, an uncertain look on his face. His suburban life hadn't prepared him for this kind of emotion. I tried for a lighter touch. "Anyway, my rib cage is a little sore, which is why I winced when you grabbed me in the bar. The question that's exercising me, though, is who told Earl that I'd been around asking questions, or who paid Earl to frighten me off?" Ralph was looking horrified.
"Have you been to the police about this?"
"No," I said impatiently. "You see, they know I'm interested in the case, and they've asked me to get off, too, though more politely."
"Well, murder really is a police matter."
I felt a quick surge of anger. "Ralph, this is my job, and I can't run away." The waiter was back. Ralph ordered baked oysters and quail, but I opted for Senegalese soup and spinach salad. I was too exhausted to want a lot of food. The soup was light, creamy, with a hint of curry, and I started feeling better. "Now explain to me why a union wouldn't buy insurance from Ajax," I said to Ralph.
"Oh, they could," he told me. "But a union, like the knife grinders, get their insurance where they work."
"That covers disability payments, doesn't it?"
"Yes, or death, if it's job-related. There are lots of people who go on disability who shouldn't. There are plenty of corrupt doctors. Still, your real money is in pensions, though it's hard to imagine a full-scale fraud connection with it."
"Well, could your boss be involved in rigging phony policies with the knife grinders, providing dummy policyholders? It bugs me that Masters agreed to see me so easily. He'd never heard of me. He has wall-to-wall appointments, but he didn't even take phone calls while we were talking."
"Yes, but you knew Peter was dead and he didn't, so you were expecting him to behave in a guilty way. I don't really see anything so surprising in Yardley's talking to you. If Peter had been just a stray kid, I might, but an old family friend's son..."
What Ralph said made sense. Okay, you could be right. Did you check on Ajax's pension money? Ralph laughed. Sorry, Vic, nothing doing. I called a friend of mine over there. This guy says Ajax wouldn't touch knife grinders with a 10-foot pole.
I felt suddenly tired.
You look like your adventures are catching up with you, Ralph said.
Yeah, I'm fading. I think I better go to bed. Although, in a way, I hate to go to sleep. I'll be so sore in the morning. Maybe I could wake up enough to dance. It keeps the joints from stiffening.
Well, maybe we could do both. Sleep and exercise, I mean.
The smile in his eyes was half embarrassed, half pleased. I suddenly thought that after my evening with Earl and Tony, I'd like the comfort of someone in bed with me. Sure, I said, smiling back. Ralph called for the bill. I considered fighting him for it, but decided I'd done enough fighting for one day. We waited outside for the doorman to fetch the car. Ralph stood close, not touching me, but tense. I realized he'd been planning this ending all along, and smiled to myself in the dark. When the car came, I fell asleep on his shoulder. When we reached my address, it took an effort to pull myself out of the car. If I asked Ralph to, he would carry me. But it would alter the dependency balance in the relationship too much. I set my teeth and climbed the stairs. Inside the flat, I went into the kitchen and pulled a bottle of brandy from the cupboard. I got two glasses down. They were clear red with twisted stems, two of my mother's Venetian glasses. When I brought them into the living room, Ralph took the glasses from me, admiring them. I explained that my mother had left Italy with 8 red glasses wrapped carefully in her underwear in the one suitcase she carried, and they always had pride of place in any festive meal. We sat for a while without talking, drinking our brandy. Suddenly he grinned and said, "When I got divorced, I moved into the city because I had a theory that that's where you meet the chicks. Sorry, women. But you're the first woman I've asked out in the 6 months I've been here." He flushed a little. "I just wanted you to know that I'm not hopping in and out of bed every night." I didn't answer him. Instead, I stood up, took his hand, and walked him into the bedroom.